This is the Kona Edge, the home of Ironman triathletes who dream of qualifying for the World Championships on the Big Island.
Welcome on to this edition of the Kona Edge. I'm Brad Brown. It's brilliant to have you listen and download to the podcast. Thank you so much. I do appreciate it. We've been getting some amazing feedback. And don't forget, you can be in touch. You can pop me an email, brad@thekonaedge.com. If there's someone you think I should be chatting to, or if there's a story you'd like to share, please do be in touch, brad@thekonaedge.com. Also, get onto our Facebook group. If you haven't joined it yet, head over to thekonaedge.com/Facebook. We've got some cool things coming up in that Facebook group in the weeks and months to come. I'm working on a couple of things behind the scenes that I can't wait to share, and I'm going to share it with you there first. So go check it out. So without further ado, let's get into today's guest, and I'm pretty excited to share her story with you. She finished top five in Kona 2016 and was just a couple of minutes away from the top spot, basically, age group on the Big Island. And it's a great pleasure to welcome onto the show today, Claire Davis. Claire, welcome onto the Kona Edge. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Brad.
Claire, that's an Aussie accent that I hear. Tell me a little bit about where's home for you. Where are you based on the planet at the moment?
So I'm originally from Perth in Western Australia, at the moment, I'm living in Barman Heads in Victoria, and I've spent the last 4 years living in Singapore.
So pretty much all over the place. I laugh every time someone says Perth. As a South African, we almost consider Perth our 10th province. There's so many South Africans living there. So
it's pretty close. It's direct flight.
Exactly. No, it's an amazing place, and obviously Perth's pretty close to Busselton, which is where Ironman Western Australia takes place. A lot of South Africans go over there, so we know that pretty well. But as far as triathlon goes, you mentioned the stint in Singapore. That was where you first got involved in the sport, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. I come from a swim background. I swam competitively until I was 21, and then I had a couple of years off, sort of enjoying life after swimming, and then moved to Singapore and joined a triathlon club pretty much purely for the social side of it, to meet a few new people in a new country, and got into triathlon that way.
Tell me about the swimming background and sort of the competitiveness there. I mean, were you always a swimmer growing up? How soon did you start?
Well, I was sort of always a swimmer, but I didn't join a competitive club until I was 13, so which is quite late by the swimming standards. And so was swimming twice a day, 6 days a week, competed up into at a national open level, went to Commonwealth Games trials in 2006. Didn't have a stellar career in the pool, really, sort of was just scraping by and getting into nationals year on year. But I was a 200 breaststroke specialist, and so that's what I did up until I was 21.
And what that probably did too was instill the discipline needed to train for a sport like triathlon. It's one thing training for a single sport, but swimming is a weird one, particularly if you want to swim at the highest level. I mean, twice a day is what it takes.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's probably what drew me towards triathlon was I was craving the structure that I had while I was swimming. Sort of the 25 hours a week in the pool was kind of standard, even if you weren't the best in the country, but you were aspiring to get to nationals, that was what was expected. So triathlon definitely sort of feeds the structure cravings that I have.
Those numbers are pretty crazy. I mean, I don't think people realize what it takes to be a highly competitive swimmer. 25 hours in the pool, I guess it's the same to be a highly competitive triathlete, but I mean, as a teen and going into your early 20s, did you ever feel like, this is just too much, I can't do this?
Not really. It was probably more towards the end of my career that I started to feel that. It's like I said, you live for the structure, and so it's okay. I'm up at 4:30 every morning and in the pool between 5 and 7, and then go to school and later on that was work and university, and then back in the afternoon and in the pool for 2 hours plus a warm up and warm down on dry land. So yeah, it wasn't. You just roll through it and that's what's expected. It becomes that if you want to do this, this is what is the bare minimum required from you. And I think, is the same in triathlon as well.
Mm. I find that interesting. You say you only joined a formal sort of swim club, competitive swim club at 13. Were you pretty good from the outset? I mean, was this something you discovered late, or was it just that you took the sport up late and realized pretty soon you were good at it?
No, so I swam in what was sort of a non-competitive squad from when I was about 8 until 13. So I was probably only swimming two or three sessions a week then. And then a squad opened up near my house, and so I joined in there. And that's sort of when it became 5 sessions a week up to 10 and 12.
And growing up, I mean, was it all about swimming, or did you partake in other sports as well?
No, it was all about swimming, really. It's sort of when you commit to the sport, that's kind of, is all or nothing. Like, I played a little bit of school sport and netball as I was growing up, but it was, yeah, sort of when you got to the point, I liked the competition to begin with. So, you know, competitions are all day Saturday and Sunday, pretty much every weekend. So that takes away any ability to really get into any other sport.
Well, have you got any regrets from your swimming career? I mean, obviously you can fix some of those and from a competition perspective in triathlon, but as a swimmer, did you leave anything out there that you wish you had possibly done?
I wish I had maybe started a little bit earlier, but then I think there's always a bit of a catch-22 there, where when I came in at 13, there was already a lot of people leaving the sport at that time through burnout. I don't think I have any regrets, really, when I look back at it now. I met a lot of really great friends who I'm still friends with, and I sort of was able to travel around the country to nationals and things like that. So I don't think I have any regrets, but there is things that I take out of it now from swimming that I apply to triathlon, particularly towards the end of my career when I was starting to feel really burnt out and disengaged with the sport. So every now and so often, particularly after big races, I might have those feelings again towards triathlon. And so it's kind of just, I'm looking to cut them off at a head before it gets too big of an issue, which I think that's what happened in swimming, that I just tried to tough it out and didn't take myself out of the situation where I was not enjoying the sport and take a step back. So I try and do that a little bit more if I'm feeling a little bit low on motivation.
Because that is a big challenge for a lot of age groupers who are juggling a career and family and the sport, is this feeling of burnout. Because particularly if you want to be good at it and you want to be competitive, you've got to put the time in. You cannot fudge one of these things. What are some of the strategies that you do, or some of the things that you do to deal with those times? Because we all have them at some stage in our triathlon mm-hmm. career.
I'm going through it right now on the come down from Kona. I devoted so much time, energy, effort, financial into getting onto the podium at Kona that it's almost sort of a bit like, well, what's next? And having achieved that goal. And so really just I had some time off training and now just I've chosen some really short races and like super sprint type races, just to sort of try and find the fun back in the sport and something different rather than the long stuff all the time. There's nothing wrong with taking time out of this sport. It's a really difficult sport to do and to commit to. So if it's not fun, it's really hard to do.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's funny you say it's something you're struggling with right now, because I'm sitting in the same sort of boat, where I had a good few years of a long stretch of doing lots of races, and I feel burnt out, and I'm focusing on one of the disciplines that I love, which is running, and I've picked a couple of races that I want to focus on, and we'll probably go back to try and maybe doing an Ironman at the end of the year. But like you say, it's important to step away and just almost reassess why you're doing it. It's you can't go all the time. Something's got to give.
Yeah, exactly.
Claire, as far as the step up from swimming to triathlon, you mentioned you joined that club in Singapore as more of a social side of things. When did you start taking it really seriously?
So I, not that long after I started triathlon, I signed up for a half iron distance in Indonesia, which it was called Metaman back then. It's now the Bintan 70.3. And I had just finished up a job and was looking for another one. And my partner said to me, he said, well, you better do a half Ironman to kill some time. And so I got in, I did that and I loved it. I had a long day out there. I think I scraped in just under 6 hours, and I swore I'd never do an Ironman, despite the fact that I loved the half distance so much. And then we decided to do the 70.3 in Geelong in 2014, which is actually not too far from where I'm living right now. And as part of that, Ironman had a promotion on that if you signed up during a certain period of time, you could win an entry into Ironman Melbourne, which was sold out at that stage. And as it turns out, that my fiance and I both won slots into Ironman Melbourne, which was 5 months from that date. And he said to me, oh, well, you have to do it now. You'll never sign up for one if you don't do it now. And so I thought, oh, well, I'll just tick this off my bucket list. And we rolled through to Ironman Melbourne in five months down the track, having no idea what this thing was about. We didn't have a coach. I'd never had a bike fit done. And I had the best day. I enjoyed every single second of it. And I couldn't wait to do another one. I signed up for Ironman Melbourne 2015 as soon as it opened. In 2014, I was in the top 10 and I think I've had the fastest age group swim of the female age group swim of the day. And I thought, maybe if I get a coach and a bike fit and learn a little bit more about this sport, maybe I can go to this Kona thing. And so it kind of went from there. But I didn't engage a coach until the end of that year. And then when I spoke to her, she said, gee, you're only giving me 12 weeks to get ready for Ironman Melbourne. You'll be okay. And at that stage, I didn't tell her about my Kona aspirations. I was almost a little bit embarrassed that I had this dream and went again. And I finished third in my age group and after a pretty dismal run and missed out on the slot by one spot. And I decided then that I shouldn't be so embarrassed about this goal. And so said to my coach, I want to go to Kona. Let's do it. And so she said, okay, well, race selection is going to be really important for you because I'm not the greatest on the bike. And so on a course like Melbourne, where it's fast and flat, I get exposed a little bit. So the harder, the better for me. And she said, okay, well, maybe Ironman Langkawi, which is in Malaysia, an hour flight from Singapore. And so I signed up for that. And that was the goal from there and went through to that and qualified there.
I love the course selection issue because that's, funnily enough, a thing that we get asked quite often here at the Kona Edge is how do you choose the course that best suits you? But you've got to play to your strength, don't you? You mentioned your bike's not your strongest of the disciplines and you get exposed on fast, flat ones. So you've got it's horses for courses. That's the way you've got to go about it.
Yeah, and, you know, it's hot in Langkawi. I think it was 38 degrees the year I did it, and it was similar in the last couple of years. And I live in the heat while I was in Singapore, and so that was a big advantage. And I can climb hills quite well, you know, despite not being that great on the bike. So that's what it came down to. It came down to this is really the course for me.
Claire, how did you find the transition of picking up the other two sports coming from a swimming background? I mean, you mentioned doing stuff out of the pool during your swimming career, but were you cross-training at all? Were you doing anything on the bike, perhaps even just an indoor trainer running and that sort of thing? Did it come pretty easily for you, or is it something you struggled with?
It's something I struggled with, particularly on the bike. I always had the endurance, so going for long periods of times wasn't the issue. It was more the change in the like the physical requirements for the other two sports, and even to this day, I'm still frustrated at times. And where if I'm in the pool, I can pace myself and I know exactly what pace that I'm going 100 by 100 to the second. Where if I go running without a watch on, I can't tell you whether I'm running 4 minute K's or 6 minute K's. So, and that was something that I really frustrates me because I am such a metronome in the pool and I just can't work it out when I run and bike.
Do you think that'll come with time?
I think it will come with time, and I am much better on the run side of that now. I think, you know, just the way that I went about my marathon training was like, this is your marathon pace, and I will do everything at a marathon pace outside of, you know, required efforts. But, you know, moderate runs, easy runs are always done at my marathon target pace. And the bike, that's sort of come on more since getting a power meter. So I can have a look at the numbers and say, okay, well, I'm moving around a little bit, even though it doesn't feel like I'm putting any more or less power down, the power meter doesn't lie.
Mm, absolutely. Okay, one thing, obviously coming from a swimming background, you've always had a coach. You mentioned that you picked up a coach once you sort of decided on that Melbourne slot in 12 months. So it's something you've bought into the idea of having someone to help you. How important has that been in your journey, particularly transitioning from a competitive swimming background into triathlon, to getting someone who can help you across all three disciplines and not just the one?
Yeah, and I think someone else holding you account, like being accountable to someone else as well. Like, it's not that I'm not motivated to do it myself. It's just, I, like you said, I've come from a swimming background. I've had, you know, 10 years in the pool where someone has walked up and down next to me yelling at me. So it's not a hard stretch for me to move over to a coach. And I feel like I can take criticism from the coach quite well, and you know, because that's something I'm used to. It's not a personal attack. It's just, this is, you didn't do this right, or you could do this better, and so I kind of thrive off that.
I wish I had someone who would ride next to me on the bike yelling at me. I need that.
Yeah. I kind of would like to have it out on the bike. Like that. Yeah.
Talk to me about the build-up to that second one and qualifying. I normally ask, did you do anything differently? But you did a lot differently. First of all, you had a long build-up. That's probably the first important thing.
Yes.
But what were some of the structural things you did in the build-up to that second one that allowed you to qualify?
It was kind of a bit of a blessing in disguise, I guess, in that period in Singapore. There was a three-month period where there was severe pollution to the point where you really shouldn't be going outside because it was dangerous for your health, which meant a lot of indoor training sessions and a lot of multiple-hour runs on the treadmill. So probably more so on the bike side, but just being on the indoor trainer, and you know, there were times where I was on the trainer for 6 hours, or you know, 6 hours in a day, maybe split up. And I think not only are you, because you're concentrating, the efforts that you're doing on the trainer are more concentrated and specific than maybe when you're outside, but also just the mental toughness of sitting on an indoor trainer for 3 to 6 hours at a time. So that was probably one of the big things that I was forced inside onto the indoor trainer and forced to love it.
It's amazing you say that, because the more I chat and the longer we do this podcast too, over time, power is a big thing on the bike, but indoor sessions, as much as they are mind-numbingly boring, a lot of athletes swear by them, and it's just because they're in a controlled environment and are able to really knuckle down and get the things and hit the numbers they need to do in those sessions. Would you agree that, I mean, going forward, even if you are able to train outside, it's still important to have really solid indoor sessions that you can work on?
Yeah, and in the lead up to Kona, where I did have, you know, the ability to go outside because there was no pollution or less pollution, I was still doing at least 2 rides a week on the indoor trainer, in addition to another 2 or 3 outside. So they were still there, and that's where the big power work was done.
As far as getting to Kona and knowing that you're competing against some of the best athletes in the world, you're obviously not afraid of big competitions. You've raced many of those over your swimming career. Going into Kona, were you intimidated? What was the thoughts and the feelings going on to the Big Island?
No, I think it's kind of funny. I think once you finally qualify for Kona, there's almost like this big boost in confidence. Sometimes I think it's harder to qualify, to break through that qualification barrier, than it is to actually get there, or than it is to actually race on the island. I used to look at who I was up against, you know, leading into races, and in the lead up to Langkawi, my partner said to me, he said, I'm sick of you looking at this. I'm sick of you wasting time and energy doing this. In my age group, 25 to 29, he's like, you have to win. There's no other way about it. You just have to win. And so I think that that's something that I've sort of taken on board. And especially in 25 to 29 at Corona, 95% of those girls have won an Ironman because we only get one slot outside of championship races. So, and I kind of backed myself from early on after I qualified. I said, I think I can podium here. I think I can be in the mix. I stopped looking at who was winning the Ironmans, and I was like, you know what, we've all won one to be here. So we just have to do the best that we can and show up on the day and race our race, and what happens at the end comes out. And I think on race day, my coach said to me, she said, you just need to be patient. We're not racing until the last 10Ks in the marathon. And I think at four miles to go, after I came out of the energy lab back to the point where the spectators were allowed, she said, you've been so patient all day, now we race. And, you know, when you think about it in the scheme of Ironman, we're now into the ninth hour or the 10th hour of this Ironman, and then we start, and then you start to race. And that's what it is. That's how you do it in Kona. I think you can't go all out so early in the day because it is such a long day.
Claire, as you're talking, I'm looking at the results of the 2016 race where you finished fifth, and I'm just looking at sort of the times of the girls ahead of you, and it was really close. I mean, other than Svenja Toews who won, I mean, she had a fairly large margin. I think it was 20 minutes the margin of victory there. Between two and where you are and further back, I mean, it's number six, Alison Wilson, who finished sixth. There's literally 10 minutes between you and that, in the greater scheme of things, in an Ironman, is nothing.
I know, and it was crazy on the day, and I saw the girl in sixth place. It all kind of happened in the energy lab because we were all so close that we all got really good looks at each other going in and coming out. And I could see sixth place was running really, really well. And I think she ended up running a 3:22 or something like that. When I saw my coach again, I said, there's someone coming really fast behind me. And she said, doesn't matter, you're running really well. You can possibly repass someone if need be. And it wasn't until, you come down Palani and you can see for a long period of time, a long distance, and I couldn't see any girls in front of me coming down Palani. It wasn't until I looked at the results that I realised how close it was, because I even said to the girl who was in fourth, I said, oh, did you crack 10 hours? And she said, oh, no, it wasn't, it was a few minutes off. And so even when I'd finished, I thought that they were 6 to 7 minutes ahead of me in the third and fourth.
Yeah, I mean, two minutes away from third is not half shabby. Looking back at it now, have you got any regrets about race day? I mean, do you wish you had gone slightly harder, slightly earlier, or was, I mean, again, it's ifs and buts, you never actually know.
Yeah, I was really nauseous for the first 15 kilometres on the run, I lost a bottle of nutrition on the bike, and that sort of forced me onto the on-course nutrition a little bit earlier, and so I think that caused that. I don't think I can do anything different about the first 15Ks. Coming out of the energy lab, I sort of hit a really low point where I just thought, I don't want to run any faster than what I'm running now. And maybe if I'd had a little bit of a better portion through there, you could have changed it. But I'm not upset, and I think that, especially with the move towards, rolling starts, there's not too many times where you get to race an Ironman to the death in the last 4 kilometres, particularly, and to do it on the Big Island is pretty exciting too. So, no regrets.
You mentioned, and I'm going to ask you a little bit about the race itself, but you mentioned the rolling starts, and coming from a swimming background, you must be pretty disappointed that the rolling starts are being implemented across the board, because that is your strength. Even though you're probably not used to the mass starts and the kicking and the punching and the people swimming over you, you're comfortable enough in the water that if something does happen, you don't lose your rhythm that much. Do you think it's good for the sport? It's not good for the sport? What are your thoughts?
Like I said, there's not, there's a lot of people who will never be able to race an Ironman to the death because of the rolling starts, and it just becomes a bit of a time trial. I think it's sad that it looks like it's going to move that way. I'd love to see the mass starts stick in there. I love, like, my first Ironman in Melbourne in 2014 was a mass start, and it was a really wide start, so it wasn't, you know, I didn't think it was too bad, even if you were maybe not the strongest swimmer. And I think you lose so much of that atmosphere from taking away that mass start. And as a swimmer, I quite enjoy, even as a pool swimmer, I quite enjoy the rough and tumble of a start, and because I can manage it, and I don't get freaked out, and I'll give as good as I get in a mass start.
Yeah, I'm with you. I agree. I'm not the best of swimmers, but I do think it takes something away as well. And it's one thing standing on the beach and everyone's in it together and the gun goes and everyone gets in. I definitely miss that without a doubt as well. Claire, with regards to the race, I mean, you said you've got no regrets, but do you feel there's some unfinished business on the Big Island so that you can go faster and you can go better from a position point of view? Because often in a race like Kona, it's not just about the time, it's about winning. And you've got to do what it takes to win on the day, and it might be a slower time, conditions come into play. Do you feel that there's unfinished business in Hawaii?
Yeah, I do. I feel like, and I've said this to sort of a lot of people, I said I feel like I understand that race so much more having done it once. You know, you can read all you want about what happens on race day, but until you actually experience it, you know, you don't know. You know, I was going into race week and I was thinking, I don't know how to race this. I don't know what I should be doing when. And you know, it took a lot of talking from my coach just to sort of talk me back down off the edge and sort of just like, you just got to be patient all day. You know what numbers you need to hit. You know what number is too high on that power meter. You know how fast is too fast on the run. But pretty much the only thing I was told for race day that I could do whatever I like was in the swim, basically. Go out and do your thing in the swim, but then we have a plan for the rest of the day. And so I feel like I understand that so much more, and I'd like to go back and get higher up on the podium.
I know you taking a bit of a step back at the moment and you're sort of reassessing, but I'm going to ask the question anyway, when are you going back?
Well, I'd like to go back this year. I was looking at doing Ironman Port Macquarie, which is, I think, in 11 weeks now, or coming up very soon. So, but I'm probably not quite there, and most of that's coming from just not mentally prepared to do the time on the bike at the moment. So I'm just going to race some short stuff for the next 6 to 8 weeks and then see after that and possibly Cairns. But you know, if I don't go back to Kona this year, it'll always be there next year. So there's a few more Ironman in Asia later in the year, which would be an early qualification for next year. So I'm fairly flexible and sort of letting my motivation dictate that at the moment.
And there's always birthdays coming up, and we know what birthdays triathletes celebrate, don't we?
Yeah, I've got one of those ones this year.
I love it. Claire, as far as sort of people starting out in the sport, we've got quite a few sort of novice triathletes who are training for their first Ironman and maybe not possibly going for a Kona slot, but just trying to wrap their head around the distance and can they do it. What advice would you give to an out-and-out newbie who's just getting into the sport and thinking of doing an Ironman?
My first thing would be suggest is to race the short stuff first. I had a fairly quick introduction into Ironman. I did it within 12 months of starting triathlon. If I'd had my time again, I maybe would have extended that out. I think it's just finding some consistency in your training and finding a program or a timetable that suits you and not committing to, yes, I can do 20 hours a week, but then only showing up for 13. You're much better off finding a program with only 13 hours of training and nailing every single one of those sessions. And I think that's where a lot of people sort of fall down, in that they think I have to be doing this big volume. Big volume's not for everyone.
Yeah, and it also depends on what your goals are, to be honest. I mean, you could get through an Ironman if you're just going for a finish with I don't want to say a little bit of volume, but you don't have to be doing the crazy 20, 30 hours a week just to finish an Ironman.
No, and I think when I did my first Ironman, I have no record of that training because I just did it myself and sort of started it riding 70 Ks on a Saturday and trying to increase that by 10 kilometers a week. And that's how I did it. And I wouldn't, can't imagine that I was doing much more than, you know, 8, maybe 12 hours on a big week.
Yeah. And like you said, you had the greatest day out. You absolutely loved it. And that's what's keeping you coming back. So I think that's probably first and foremost is just enjoy it. Don't go and chase major goals and be bitterly disappointed if you don't hit them first time is just you know, go and experience it. See if this is for you. If it's not, go and find something else, whether it's golf or mountain biking, whatever it is. But if you don't put too much pressure on first time out, chances are you're gonna have a great day.
Yeah, exactly.
Claire, as far as biggest lesson you've learnt out of doing the sport and being involved in Ironman, what have you learnt?
Biggest lesson, probably just, again, just finding some enjoyment out of it. It's not a sport that you can do if you don't enjoy it. So, you know, if that means changing it up and maybe changing your race plan or changing up the training to keep it fun, that's probably the thing that I've learned about it, and not take it so seriously. A lot of people take this sport really, really seriously, and so you kind of can get swept up into that. And so you've got to step back and enjoy it and make sure that you're not, you know, we're not playing for sheep stations most of the time. So, unless you're a professional, maybe at Corona, maybe you are, but, you know, this is supposed to be fun and this is supposed to be a hobby outside of family and work.
Talk to me about keeping that juggle between family and work and the sport going. That's also something that a lot of age groupers struggle with, is the balance. How do you deal with it?
Yeah, I was very fortunate last year. I finished a contract in January, and my partner was very supportive, and so he allowed me to chase the Kona dream. And so I didn't actually work in that 9 months leading up to Kona, and I've just jumped back into the workforce now, and so I'm just trying to juggle that going to training and going to work and doing both things, you know, successfully. My partner is super, super supportive. He's probably, he's so good. He's everywhere on the course all day long. He does everything for me in the lead up to Ironman. So I'm very, very grateful. So I think getting the buy-in from your family and your partner is a big part of making your triathlon journey a success.
Absolutely. Well, Claire, thank you so much for sharing your journey with us. I'm going to get you on in a week or so's time to chat a little bit about your swim and then the other disciplines as well. But we'll save that for next time. Thanks for your time today on The Kona Edge.
Thanks, Brad.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of The Kona Edge. Don't forget to connect with us on social media. Simply search for The Kona Edge.